This weekend, 70,000 design swats, decorators and developers decamped to the Parc des Expositions Paris for the biannual trade fair Maison et Objet. Here, some 3,000 exhibitors hawk everything from textiles to toilets and chairs to Christmas trees, plus plenty of tasteful take-homes from the industry leaders besides. Our report on the fun of the fair is ahead on this very special edition of Section D. Hello from the Maison et Objet Design Fair in Paris. This is Section D and I'm Josh Fennett. Today we'll hear from some of the best independent makers, world-leading design firms and entrepreneurs, including the man in charge of the lot of them, Philippe Brocard.
We give them the opportunity in 5 days to meet retailers, interior designers, decorators, hotel owners, developers from around the world. And that's, I would say, our main mission is to help the brands, the creative brand, to grow their business.
Plus, a word from Danish designer Christina Dam.
When I can tell now that I started up with a wood production, he was only one person, and now they are three producing for me, and you know that I can help other people to expand their companies.
We'll also find out why accessories makers such as Scottish scarf and throw specialist Beg & Co. were feeling snug and cosy at this year's show.
It's a combination of using the best raw material, Scottish water, and these teasels, and lots of skill and craftsmanship that's built up over the years.
Then we'll delve a little deeper into the crossover between fashion and furnishings with a Nordic natter at the Finnish firm Marimekko's stall here at the fair.
We have all the different kind of items you can find in that print, and also more classic Marimekko prints already from the 60s and 70s in different kind of color waves.
All that coming up on this special edition of Section D at the Maison et Objet Design Fair in Paris. Now, before we let loose into the thronged halls of a design fair showing the work of thousands of brands, we decided to seek a little counsel and context to the biannual show, which runs in September and January. Who better then to speak to than the ebullient Frenchman charged with keeping this sprightliest of fairs on its toes? I caught up with the show's managing director, Philippe Brocard, to find out a little more.
Hello, I'm Philippe Brocard. I'm the managing director of Maison Objet.
And we're sitting here on a packed first day. We're in Hall 8 of many, many halls in front of us, hundreds of exhibitors from all around the world. Maybe you could give our listeners a tiny bit of a sense about what it takes to organise this, what your job is and how you get this fair starting on time, finishing on time and leaving with so many happy people every single September, every single January. What does it take?
I would say that our main mission is to help the brands, especially the young and the creative brands, to grow their company. We give them the opportunity in 5 days to meet retailers, interior designers, decorators, hotel owners, developers from around the world. And that's, I would say, our main mission is to help the brands, the creative brand, to grow their business.
And your business is growing beautifully. There are other sides that launched in Singapore, that launched in Miami. But, you know, keeping things here in Paris is obviously very important and part of the DNA of the fair. But I wonder what people can expect this month that's new that they won't have seen before, the kind of little developments that go into offering the show a new vitality every time.
So that's the part of our job, because we organize 2 shows per year, and there's not a lot of big shows like in the design industry where you have 2 shows per year. So we always need to find new ideas. We always need to find new experience for our both exhibitors and visitors so that they still attend the fair. So we always have some huge, amazing collaboration with designer, with scenograph, with creative technology companies, so that the experience is still there.
Tell me about all the range of different people you have here. Maybe you could give me a sense of the numbers, how many exhibitors, how many people you're expecting to turn up, but also the range of products. You have everything from Christmas decorations and ethnic crafts to the highest of high designs, the most beautiful French brands, and from all over the world as well. How do you get that balance right, and do you ever say no to anyone?
Effectively, we have around 3,000 brands at the fair. we will probably welcome something like 70,000 buyers from all over the world. And I think the numbers are going to grow for this session. We have, and that's the DNA of Maison Objet, we are not a vertical event, we are more a lifestyle event where we offer the opportunity to discover products from lighting to fabrics, from home textile to smart gift or to cooking, sharing product. So that's, I would say, the value added of our fair compared to vertical shows, where our buyers have the opportunity to have a range of product that they cannot have in other trade fairs around the world.
And how important is technology? I noticed a new event that's part of it, the smart tech gift part. I think it's in Hall 5A, is it, or Hall 6? How important is that growing technology industry?
I think the technology will be more and more included in the product, but we always say that the majority of the products you have here in Maison Objet are connected not to technology only, but they are connected to emotion. So I think that, of course, the technology will be more and more included in the product, but we'll still have product handmade, limited edition, unique pieces. So at the same time, you've got a lot of technology products, but at the same time, people are asking for unique pieces. Which is very interesting also is that in the same area, which is smart gifts in all six, we have a lot of technology product, but it's where we have what we call the paper touch. So you have a lot of connected product, but at the same time, we've got more and more product with paper.
And Philippe, tell me, how important is it to be here in Paris? It's obviously where the fair has grown up and it's always been part of the fabric of the city. But you know, when I talk to exhibitors, whether they're here for the first time or whether they're here for the 10th time, part of the allure is that they can go into town afterwards, they can throw back a glass of wine, they can eat well, they can meet their colleagues, they can talk to people. You know, how do you manage where we are out here past Villepont in the Parc des Expositions and being part of the Paris design community? And that must be important to the fair as well.
Yes, that's part of the experience. Being in Paris is a value added, especially since the bad events are not anymore in Paris at the time. We're lucky of that. I would say that with the Paris Design Week, especially in September, there is something like 350-400 events in downtown Paris. So that's a good way for visitors to experience Paris by discovering new showrooms, new architecture, buildings, to be invited to cocktails, and at the end of the day they have big opportunity to connect and to continue the experience. So that's, for a lot of fairs today, it's important to have some activities outside the ground and to discover all the experience that they can have in Paris.
And I know you're a busy man, so I won't keep you for much longer, but one question I did want to ask is, you know, if you'd have come here 5 years ago when there were a lot of Chinese buyers, that would very much influence the taste. There were no trade embargoes on Russia. Have we seen other markets emerging as these markets kind of fall down a little bit? Are there more Japanese buyers? Are there more architects? What are the kind of the industry changes that you've seen during your time?
I think that especially in January this year and in September this year, we see a lot of buyers from US, Japan, Korea and China coming back in Paris, and I think it's a good sign for the economy. It's not only rely to European buyers, and I think that in the future we will probably see more and more buyers, interior designers, developers coming from the East.
And my last question for you, you're an ambitious man that's brought the fair from being part of the design calendar to very much being at the forefront of the design calendar, where people decide, you know, do I come here or IMM Cologne, do I come here or go to Milan? It's a very central part of the calendar. But, you know, what are your plans for the future? What would you like to see happen from next January, the following September? What are the things that you'd like to finesse?
So I think that we will continue to trying to give a nice experience. We have a big plan with MOM, which is our digital platform that we launched last year. So the idea is that people can connect all year long. It's not only the 5 days of the show, but all year long they have the opportunity to discover new brands, to discover new products. So that's part of what we want to achieve. And we have also the opportunity to connect the people through our social network activities. So let's focus on digital and try to give always a better experience for our community during the fair.
That was Maisonnet Objet General Manager Philippe Brocart. Now, of course, I'm not the only Monocle parishioner in town. We've dispatched a rabble of reporters, cafe staff and retail folk from Midori House in London. And I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by the show's producer. It's Ben Ryland. Ben, welcome to the show.
Hello, Josh. Thank you very much. I have to say, this is my first time personally at the fair this year. I have been an avid listener to Monocle's coverage, of course, in the past. But it is the first time I've managed to roam the halls myself. And my goodness, there are quite a few halls and a lot of people contained within them. There really are the best of the best here at the fair, aren't there?
Yes, there is, Ben, but I suppose we're both coming to terms with it a little bit. This is my sixth year at the fair, and the focal point of the interesting things to see, of the most interesting brands, does change each year, as Philippe Brocart mentioned, and it's very hard to keep a fair that happens twice a year feeling new and feeling innovative and feeling interesting. So we've focused on, I'd say, the main area, halls kind of 7, 8 and 9, which contain enough to be getting on with, but they tend not to be the mass-produced, wholesale, cheap, made-in-China kind of design products that do permeate the other fairs. And you played a bit of a blinder, Ben. Very early on in the day, you spied a bit of a Monocle favourite. Who did you speak to first?
Well, one of the people that I wandered over to for a chat was the Danish designer, Christina Dam. Now, she was telling me that since she first started coming here to the fair a few years ago, she's been seeing her customer base expand quite rapidly. And during our chat, Christina actually showed me some of the pieces from her latest collection.
I'm Christina Dam, and I run Christina Dam Studio. I have exhibited here for 10 times now, and I present my collection of furnitures and accessories with a sculptural minimalistic feeling. Yeah.
Now, you're a Danish designer. You come from a part of the world that is very well known for its designs. In fact, it feels as though much of the world is trying to emulate some of the styles that have originated in your region. How do you find that for you personally? Is that making your particular kind of design more visible on the world stage, or is it making it harder for you to maybe stand out?
It's a good thing for me as a Danish designer, because as you say, that everybody looks in the direction of what we are doing. I'm pretty much inspired by Japanese design, actually. I think it has some kind of the same touch and feeling, the minimalistic feeling, like the Scandinavian designs. So I think it's a positive thing, actually, yeah.
Your part of the world is renowned for its designs. So, I mean, Stockholm Design Week is obviously quite a big deal. What makes you want to come here to Paris?
This is the most important fair for me, because I meet the people from all over the world. Of course, Stockholm you also meet a lot, but more people come from the north of Europe. People are flying in from the United States, from Japan, from China. And for my products, I sell a lot to these kind of countries, Australia, New Zealand. So it's a very important fair for me. I meet people from all over the world, and that's nice for me.
How do you find the mood in recent years? I suppose economically, politically, things have gone through ups and downs. It does affect people in all different ways. How do you feel that's reflected here as far as business is concerned? Are people still feeling optimistic? Are they still looking for new designs? Are they still looking ahead?
I think it depends on actually what country you come from. I can feel that, for example, France has been a little down period, actually, for the past half year. And that, of course, reflects the sale to France. So in that kind of matter, it's a little bit fun to stand here in Paris and exhibit, but it's because I meet all people from all over the world. So for me, my little studio, we got retailers from so many countries, and there's no particular country who's really standing out. Maybe Norway a little bit, when it has a down period in France, then I just sell more to Switzerland. You know, so it's for me, I don't feel it that much at the moment. But if you run a business where you really have several markets that performing super, super good for you, then it's a problem, of course. But for me, it's more an all-round situation in that matter, yeah.
Well, Christina, you've clearly been busy because you've got quite a few new designs here at the fair this year. Can we have a bit of a walkthrough of some of your new pieces?
Yeah. This piece is the reflecting mirror. It's designed for, you know, you can use it in your bathroom or in your entrance. For me, it's very important that it's a piece that has some kind of decoration feeling when you place it in the room. So you can even have it in your living room just as a decoration piece. You can flip the mirror from side to side. I got 11 new launches this season, so it's a quite huge...
My goodness, you have been extremely busy.
Yeah, I did. We have the new posters of Villa Savoy and Bauhaus Archive with silver foil on top of an uncoated paper. That's where my studio started. I draw these black and white illustrations, and now I wanted to expand into these posters with the architectural feeling. I'm educated from the architecture school in Copenhagen, so for me this part of my collection is quite important, and the first thing I did with the studio was to do illustrations. So, and I need always a new illustration or a new poster to be inside a new collection. So these two are from that perspective. Then we got this mobile mirror, is it called? It's a solid brass and steel, and you have mirror on both sides, so it can hang light free in the air and make a reflection of the room. This is a little art piece.
So the idea, of course, is for it to hang freely, suspended away from the wall, so it can spin really of its own bearing.
Yeah, I think personally for me this is the masterpiece of the new collection. Then we got this grid cabinet with perforated steel and black marble on the top. It's a trend right now that for these, or at least in Scandinavia, we have a trend for these cabinets. So for me it was important to get that kind of piece inside my collection. We got a lot of good response already, so that's super positive. A lot of orders on that one, so that seems to be a good piece.
Oh, absolutely. It's a lovely, solid piece of furniture, and yet somehow feels like it's not too intrusive, perhaps because you can actually see the contents of the cabinet from the outside. But then you've got that contrasting with the very solid piece of marble on its top.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, for me, it has the feeling of twilight, just to be a little bit artistic in my way of expressing it. But I decided to have these perforated steel both outside and inside, so you can see what's inside, but you can still close the doors and feel like, okay, now I close for all my mess. But when you move around it, the density of the perforating steel would be more or less. So exactly like twilight, hey, now it hits the dark. Or then it did get more dense. So that was what I was thinking when I designed it.
Always good to get into the mind of a designer.
So that was in my mind. Yeah, what more do we got? We got this silent lamp. I had the collection in my collection already, these two, a table lamp and the lamp hanging on the wall up there. So we added the big one, the silent lamp. It's solid brass and burnt steel. And what I love is that, you know, you have this burnt steel with different, you know, it's not perfect, and that I like, that you can see the handwork of the workers. I keep, by the way, all my production in Europe. That's something I really like to do, because it's easier for me to control the production, but also because of shipping cost and environment cost, I could say.
Absolutely. Yeah. And as you were saying, I think when you look at the design of this, you can get a feeling for it actually being made. Is that important for you in your design approach, that when you get your pieces, when they arrive to you, you can actually look at this and feel as though you can actually see its design process in the finished product?
Yeah, it's actually very important for me. I started, you know, I have my productions in Poland, and Portugal and Bosnia, and it's important for me. It's like my family's, all the small productions and small workshops. Many of my products come actually from small workshops, maybe with one or two people, and some of these workshops grow with me, so that's something that I really think it's important. I'm proud when I can tell now that I started up with a wood production. He was only one person, and now they are three producing for me. And you know that I can help other people to expand their companies is a nice story, I think.
Danish designer Christina Dam there, speaking to the show's producer, Ben Rylan. Now, Ben, many of us at Monocle are quite familiar with the range of wonderful Scottish-made ephemera scarves and throws from Beg & Co. And quite a few folk back at Midori House actually wear these scarves, not, I don't think, because they can afford them, but because one Christmas party, they were gifted to everyone, which I think is probably the best explanation. Do you have one?
I do indeed have one, and no, it isn't because I'm overpaid. That's certainly true. It is because of the generosity of Monocle, indeed. And look, I have to say that it's quite relevant to be wearing these scarves at the moment here in Paris. It's lovely and warm inside the halls here, but my goodness, the weather outside has certainly taken a turn. And look, this brand has actually been around since way back in 1866, would you believe? However, today the brand does maintain a certain air of contemporary elegance. Now, some of the companies here, I would have to say, they tend to shy away from, say, appearing to be from anywhere in the world in particular. However, Josh, with Beg & Co, they actually tend to wear their Scottish heritage quite literally on their shoulders.
I'm Anne Riley. I'm Sales and Marketing Director, and I'm responsible for the Beg & Co brand.
So we've got a beautiful range of products that are surrounding us at the moment. Now, I understand you've not been at the fair for so many years in the past. What made you make that decision to actually come here to Paris?
Well, we've always had an interiors collection, and we made a lot for some of the couture brands. But since we started our Beg & Co collection, first of all, we started with accessories. And then last year, we decided that we would take that more into interiors. We had a few very good customers who were having a lot of success with our interior range. So we designed a special collection, and we came here last time, and it was a very good fair for us. So we've come back.
Tell me a little bit about the Beg & Co brand. Maybe point out one of the one or two key pieces and describe to us what about that really describes the whole aesthetic of Beg & Co.
Well, I think what's really important is probably the cashmere and this beautiful finish, which we achieved using natural teasels, which are grown especially to our specifications to a certain size. So it's a combination of using the best raw material, Scottish water, and these teasels, and lots of skill and craftsmanship that's built up over the years. So we offer in the plain colours, we offer a whole array of different plain colours. We offer a really nice reversible, and then designs as well. So some geometrics, and you can see here a really colourful stripe, which we've done for holidays. And the thing that's been really successful recently has been this travel blanket, which is washed cashmere, and which is just the sort of thing you want to pull around when you're on a plane and it gets a little bit chilly. So we've had a lot of interest in that, both from buyers and from the press.
Something that does stick out to me is that beneath the Beg & Co logo up on the wall here, we've quite conspicuously got made in Scotland. And you did mention just earlier that Scottish water is a key part of the product and the process in which the product is made. How much of the fact that you are from Scotland goes into the overall product itself?
I think that's really important. We started 150 years ago. We started in Paisley and then moved to Ayr in 1900 and moved there really for clean air and clean water. But I think it's about, you know, there's many influences because there's a whole sort of heritage, there's the craftsmanship, there's the skill, but I think we're also influenced by our environment, whether it's seascapes or landscapes or even urban. You know, people don't think so much about cities, but I think we're influenced by all those aspects of Scotland. It inspires us really.
Well, we are here at Maison. It's an absolutely enormous event, and we're surrounded by designers and product makers from all around the world. Tell me a little bit about how you think that the overall brand of Scotland fits into you being here in Paris in particular. What do people come to you and say about Scottish design and Scottish products?
I think they like to find something that's from Scotland, which has that heritage, but is also contemporary. And I think sometimes they're surprised by that. I think they're also surprised by the fact that we do very, very lightweights, which is quite unusual in Scotland. But I think, you know, Scotland does have a reputation for quality, so that's obviously something that's really good. And then this is a really international fair. You see Japanese, Russians, Chinese, Brits, French, you know, it's a really great fair from that point of view.
Well, then just on the topic of the fair itself, what does the fair do for your company in particular?
Well, I think it's about making contacts, really. You don't necessarily write orders at the fair. We do write some orders at the fair, but a lot of the time it's about people coming and having an impression, seeing what you do, and then following up later.
Ben Ryland there, visiting the Beg & Co stall here at Maison et Objet. So next up, Ben, you visited a bit of a giant of the Finnish design scene. We're all very familiar with Nordic design, with the kind of pared down sort of modernist look that it's kind of acquired and that's been much aped around the world, whether that's reproduced in a Billy bookshelf bought from IKEA or, you know, in very high design and, you know, the reappropriation of all these wonderful designers. One contemporary strand to this wonderful opus of work from the Nordics comes from Marimekko, very much known for its beautiful patterns. But there's been a bit more of an emphasis, as I suppose we saw throughout the fair, not only on homeware, not only on furniture, not only on industrial design, but kind of on the edifice, on the pattern, on the way that things look. And Marimekko very much caught your eye, didn't it, Ben?
Indeed, yeah. I think you touch upon one of the most interesting factors there, Josh, that, I mean, this design from this region has become so ubiquitous in recent times that I think it is becoming a little bit more difficult for a lot of these brands to stand out from amongst each other. And that sort of pared down feel that we've seen becoming more and more common and more in fashion, I must say. I think some of the brands have taken a step away from that, and Marimekko is certainly one of them. Minimalism isn't exactly what you'd say first and foremost about the 2017 collection that they've got on display here this year. The fall collection includes a range of homewares featuring bears, birds, flowers and mushrooms. So I wandered over to ask how Finland's rich cultural history has informed some of the company's design approach.
Hi, my name is Lila Vertanen and I'm part of Marimekko's global PR team. The year 2017 is a really big year for Marimekko and Marimekko's home country Finland as well, as Finland is turning 100 years this year. So it's a big year of celebration for the whole Finland and we're of course part of that. Here we have a special print that we designed just for the Finland 100 year. It's called The Brothers in English, and it has all these different kind of folklore animals in the forest. What you see here, we have all the different kind of items you can find in that print, and also more classic Marimekko prints already from the 60s and 70s in different kind of color waves.
As you say, your brand is very much inspired by Finland and Finnish culture. How does Finnish culture actually ripple through what we're seeing here visually? How do you translate Finnish culture to something that we can look at?
Well, Finnish culture and actually Finnish nature has always been a really big inspiration for our design team. And you can see a lot of nature-inspired things, some more like our famous Unikko, the poppy print, that's a flower, but you can see also more geometrical prints that are nature-inspired in all of our collections throughout the years.
What is it like for a Finnish brand to be at Maison? Because, of course, Finland is from a region of Europe that is very strong within its own design approach anyway. Why do you feel the need to come to Paris?
Well, we love to be here. We have all the different kind of brands here and a lot of people are expecting to see us here. We haven't been here for a couple of years. So actually, I've had many people asking me this morning, like, oh, you're back. And good to see you here. So it's really nice to be here.
A busy collection, but never mumsy from Finnish giants Marimekko there. And it's with regret, Ben, that we're running out of time on this show to display the treasure trove of gems that we uncovered at this week's show. But I suppose our listeners should fear not. There will be more interviews and more of our favourite finds from Maison et Objet coming up all week on The Globalist on Monocle 24 and also some items on next week's show. But we are not quite done with our listeners yet, are we, Ben? We've still got some other things to show them.
Absolutely, Josh. Coming up on next week's program, we'll have a chat with the lighting designer Timo Niskanen. Now, he's from a Finnish brand known as Hime. Now, he takes his design cues from some fairly unexpected places.
And the story about this lamp is it started to look like this kind of mushroom. And I name it for, like, its name is Toad from the Super Mario.
Section D was produced by Ben Ryland, edited by Sarah Miles. And I'm Josh Fennett. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.